This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. The Jets and the Senators in action tonight live in Ottawa. 6 p.m. puck drop on this fine station. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, alongside my colleagues, Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com. Joining us on the program this afternoon in 30 minutes' time, he's the Ottawa Senators play-by-play broadcaster for our affiliate, TSN 1200. Dean Brown is going to join us to preview the Jets and the Senators tonight. Coming up in 1 hour's time, Saturday Spotlight features an interview with Barry Melrose, former NHL coach, current ESPN hockey analyst, and of course also, briefly, a former Winnipeg Jet player. Mm-hmm. So we'll be joined by Barry Melrose coming up in about 1 hour's time. And then at the top of the final hour, 2 o'clock, Pat Hickey of the Montreal Gazette. Without further ado, I say good morning to both Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. And gentlemen, normally I say it's good to see you both. I got to tell you, you're both looking like you're a little rough right now.
Well, first off, you got to start saying good afternoon.
Right. It is true.
It's noon, Drew. We're the guys that were partying late last night. So.
Well, let's just go over it. Let's just go over that. Drew says, good morning, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba.
Yeah, as if there's a different time zone in Manitoba somewhere. But
to be completely accurate.
And then tells us that we look rough.
The clock on my computer here was 11:59 when I started the good morning. And then it flipped to 12 o'clock when I started the good afternoon.
Right.
Yeah, we'll let that one go.
Thank you.
We had a good time last night. We went to Norm MacDonald at the Burton Cummings Theater. He was on for 2 hours, and it was one of the funniest shows I've ever seen. So, yeah, we didn't party with Norm MacDonald after, but...
Well, Richard did on Thursday night after the Jets-Penguins game. You're doing the post-game there at Boston Pizza with our friend Rick Ralph, and who shows up? Norm MacDonald.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah?
I was excited, yeah.
And I bet he was as excited. He's like, hey! There's Richard Pollock and Rick Ralph.
That was a pretty good Norm MacDonald impression, Drew.
Thank you. I'm not very good with impressions, typically.
We'll leave the impressions to Ezzy.
Yeah, Ezzy's more of a character than I am.
No, but it was fun. We had a great time.
It's actually funny that a couple times last night, the thing that's so awesome about Norm MacDonald, Richie is a huge Norm MacDonald fan. I think everybody of our generation is. Remus was there, too, with his bro. The thing is, he doesn't really have your typical kind of delivery and your kind of one-liner jokes. He kind of just goes up there and he just kind of BS's really.
Yeah, he riffs a lot.
Exactly, and it was awesome.
Well, I'm glad you guys enjoyed it. So there you go. That's why. But you guys, nice to see you guys getting a little bit of life back in yourselves and ready to get started for 3 hours of hockey talk this afternoon.
Let's do it.
Let's look back on Thursday night's game. And I know that the Jets play the Senators, and we're going to cover that in detail coming up on the show. But that game on Thursday night against the Penguins does deserve a little bit more of our time, given that. Just sort of how special of a night it was at MTS Center and how good of a game that was. A little bit later on in the show, we're going to talk about the season so far in the NHL and how it's sort of been a little bit on the dull side to my impression. To my mind, it's been a little bit dull. Not a lot happening, not a lot of trades, not a lot of buzz, just sort of everybody going through the motions. Thursday night at MTS Center, we saw a game that was more than just one of 82 for whatever reason. It was a sort of a special night where you can see why people can fall in love with NHL hockey.
Well, the reason is Sidney Crosby, Drew. That's the reason, because everybody gets up to play him and everybody gets up to see him. It's that kind of heightened awareness that made that game, to me, made that game so good. Now, he didn't get a point, and he scored in the shootout, obviously. But the Jets got up to play against Sidney Crosby. The fans were pumped. You know, if you're doing your ticket draft, that's one of the top games of the year that you're picking.
It was. I was in my seats, and it's exactly the same logic.
And it's only once a year now because of the East-West. You know, you play one team each year. You play home game and a road game against each team.
And the other conference.
Conference. And so it has extra meaning as well in that respect. So, and the Jets looked at it as a challenge, and Penguins coming in hot, and the Jets playing really well, so kind of a measuring stick. So there's many factors, but I think the primary factor is Sidney Crosby. Is you want to show what you can do against the best player in the world, and the fans on a Thursday night, we're just amped up to see everything.
Yeah, and the Jets shut down Sidney Crosby. It was that third line that got all the goals for the Pittsburgh Penguins, talking about Brandon Sutter, Steve Downey, and Nick Spaulding, who came over in the trade for James Neal. So it had everything that game. And we've seen some awesome games since the Jets have been back, dating back to 2011, the Timu game and all of that. But this was a playoff game, guys. It had that play. Well, obviously, it wasn't a playoff game, but what I mean is it had that intensity. It had all of that drama and everything. You had the Jets scoring first and Pittsburgh going up by two goals, Downey coming out of the penalty box, and then Bufflin. Like, it was so back and forth, but it wasn't back and forth like a 13-goal game back and forth. It was still kind of relatively low scoring, I guess, when you talk about the Pittsburgh Penguins, who are averaging four goals a game. But it just had everything in it. And, you know, you had Jacob Trouba standing up for Andre Pavlik after he was knocked down by Zach Sill. And you had Blake Wheeler chucking the knuckles, and you had Evander Kane fighting. It just had all of the elements to a great hockey game. And, you know, everybody was on their feet for, it seemed like, that entire third period. And really, you know, when you talk about how important this game was for the rest of the season, right? And it's still very early on this season, and the Jets are, you know, right at that playoff line right now, in eighth in the Western Conference, and they still have a lot of work to go before they can start being comfortable that they're in a playoff spot. But the Pittsburgh Penguins, I think you know, Richie would agree, they're still a work in progress as far as their defense goes. And Olli Maatta, who's very young, you can see when he's not out of the lineup, they really miss him. And a guy like Robert Bertuzzo, he just can't skate like Olli Maatta. And they have their own issues on defense. But that's still a really good team. And you have to be proud that you were able to come back down two goals against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. And you stood up for your teammates and all of that. So that, to me, that was the best game I've ever seen at the MTS Center for Jets 2.0 goes. And you can start those debates at the water cooler, or, you know, in the living room, or anything like that. But
the beer tap in your case.
Yeah, exactly. But
Richie, let me ask you this question. You know, there's a lot we talked about on Wednesday show on NHL Midweek, that the Jets hadn't faced any adversity during this course of their recent hot streak.
That's right.
That the last time they had trailed in a game was 1-0 to the New York Islanders, going back almost, I guess, what is it now, 10 days ago, or almost 2 weeks ago at this point in time. You know, how impressed were you that in the face of adversity, down 3-1 at home to the Pittsburgh Penguins, they were able to both not panic and B, make the comeback to tie the game and send it into overtime?
Very impressed. And that's one of the key things to me about that game, is coming down, as you said, down 3-1, not forcing it too much, and being able to come back and get that point. And you know, the Jets have played, when you play with the lead, we have talked about it extensively on the show, when you play with the lead, your ability to create off mistakes of the other team is a lot higher than usual, than normal, because the team's trying to force it to create offense. And, you know, in tie games or when you're down, you're in that position. So you have to take chances usually. And if you don't, you have to play a very disciplined style and take advantage of the opportunities you have. And that's what the Jets did. You know, they didn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, I mean, they gave more breakaways and things like that than they probably would have liked, 3-on-1s and things like that they would have liked, but that was kind of in the flow of the game. They weren't running around to create those opportunities. So, you know, Trouba's goal was huge. That was probably that TSN turning point, you'd say, at the end of the second there. But again, the Jets are playing a far more disciplined style right now, and it's serving them quite well.
It's funny that you mentioned disciplined.
Given the amount of penalties, given the amount of penalties,
but you know what? I'll just mention this. I think, you know, if you look at what happened in that game and the Trouba goal coming right after, you know, Dustin Bufflin goes into the penalty box for cross-checking Steve Downey, I think we'd all agree that, you know, Steve Downey being in that situation was unfortunate, and Bufflin.
Well,
probably
how he didn't get a penalty, didn't go down a man after that was hilarious.
Yeah,
I have no love lost for Steve Downey, of course, given his reputation. But I mean, how I thought Buff should have been kicked out of the game for that.
I don't even think kicked out of the game, but at least the Jets go a man down. So, you know, we got to call the post game and somebody complain about the refereeing. The Jets benefited from the refereeing for the most part.
By the way, Steve Downey didn't come back into the game because he got the game misconduct. He in the second period, and that's not true. He came back, then they got the misconduct, and then he got a game misconduct while he was already in the penalty box.
That's right.
He had like 35 penalty minutes or ridiculous. But
it was that call, the Bufflin one, that didn't go down, and then no Trouba instigator. Those are the two benefit calls they got.
That's right.
Trouba played against Malkin all night, except for two, three shifts. Enstrom and Bogosian played against Crosby all night, except for 2-3 shifts. And I mean, Trouba has just been incredible lately. And Bogosian and Enstrom and Stewart. I shouldn't say Trouba, though. Stewart. Stewart's been very solid as well. That pairing has been excellent. And the matchups that the Jets coaches are choosing, let's give them credit where credit's due, seem to really be working out. Trouba against Taves, Trouba against Malkin. And they're shutting them down. And I thought Malkin was one of the poor games I've seen him play. He was terrible in the second period. He turned it up a bit in the third. I thought Crosby was still very effective, just wasn't able to capitalize on his opportunities. And the most, maybe for me, the most impressive part of Crosby's game was in the overtime when he forechecking by himself against Bogosian and Enstrom and picks up the puck and makes this pass. Almost ended the game, like, or it was Buffon and Enstrom. It almost ended the game. But just his pursuit on the puck is just, he just works so hard. And he's a pleasure to watch. So, you know, when you have that much action fights, that many stars on the ice and goals and some great goaltending as well, you saw. I mean, what's not to like?
Let me ask you this question. You know, after the game, you know, granted the Jets lost, but nobody was too upset about that because it's a shootout and it's a coin flip, really. Among any team in the NHL, it's a coin flip. You know, there was talk that the Jets have rounded the corner. They're a new team. There's new life. There's new blood. Mm-hmm. There's new expectations. Do you buy that? Do you think that this team is now suddenly transformed into something more than they've been? Or do you think that ultimately there's, you know, the holes in this team are going to be too much to overcome?
Well, I think it's definitely a sign that better things are to come, for me at least. And I think that, to me, watching that game, I think this is a team that has a chip on their shoulder. Absolutely. I think the way that they were playing, the way that they weren't backing down physically, I think not only were they not backing down physically, I think they were setting the tone physically. And I think they've done that against a lot of teams. I think I mentioned this on the midweek show too. I think you saw this against the Nashville Predators. Predators aren't the most physical team, and I think the Jets really won that battle. And I think that you're starting to hear, you know, these words, ugly wins, and the team identity of this team is kind of to be dirty. Not dirty, I shouldn't say dirty. I mean a little bit ugly. Get those types of wins where it's not the prettiest type of win. But, you know, as far as, you know, this kind of being a part of the season where they can look back and really rally upon it, I think you can definitely look at this game and say, okay, we were down to the Pittsburgh Penguins. We had beaten some good teams, but, you know, we really had to rely on Pavlik. But this game, we came back and we got three goals and all of that, even though, as you mentioned, the shootout points kind of not really relevant here. They got a point. But this Jets team, I think, has taken on a new identity. If you look at the team last year or even earlier this season, I think they have realized that they're going to have to win games ugly. And it's not always going to be, you know, a game where you win 4-1 and the top line gets two goals and then the second line, it's all great and everything like that. And that's probably a good thing for this Jets team to play like that. So I think it can, I mean, it's again, you don't want to throw out these sweeping statements and say, oh, well, you know, they're now the best team in the NHL. But I think they're definitely playing better than I thought they would be, especially on that road trip. And you look at it, and you're still just competing for a playoff spot now. So you're not comfortable, like, you're 4 or 5 points up on that spot. But, yeah, no, the way that they have played over the last 2 weeks, Drew, starting with the Colorado game and then going into the four-game road trip and all of that, it's impressive. And they got to keep it up here. And, you know, this road trip coming up is not going to be easy either. At the end of the road trip, you have the back-to-backs against Nashville and Minnesota. And then you're playing Ottawa and Montreal, two pretty good hockey teams. So everything's looking good right now, absolutely. But I don't think you want to say right now, you don't want to make too many statements about how the season's going to end up or anything. It's too early, really, at this point, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. I guess the question Drew asking is, do you think this team's for real?
I mean, not for real as a cup contender, because that's obviously not, they're not going to be a cup contender. Mm-hmm. But are the undisciplined, lackadaisical, easy to play against, easy on themselves Winnipeg Jets that we've seen for much of the last 3 years, are they a thing of the past? Is this a new era with the same group of people? Have the, you know, Tigers changed their stripes?
Well, I think too early to tell still. You know, I think a lot of that's emerging. It's of those same young players that are on the team, right? So it's same personnel and young players taking on more responsibility and guys, you know, playing a more mature game. And so part of that is changing, right? Part of that's, you know, coach getting through and, you know, is winning. I've asked this on the show before, and does winning then breed that confidence? Does Maurice instill confidence that breeds winning? I don't know. That's complicated. That's complicated, and I don't know if we'll ever really know the answer to that. But overall, Drew, I think what we need to see here now is this team take a step away from 500 before we start proclaiming them to be a different squad, right? I mean, what's their record right now?
7-5-2.
Okay, so that's 7-7.
Yeah,
that's 500. Okay, because if a shootout win is a win, then a shootout loss is a loss. So I just put it at 500. Okay,
sure. It's a 500 winning percentage, and you can don't talk about points percentage. I've said this on the show ad nauseum. Yeah. When you hear people talking about 500. Make sure that they're talking about the winning percentage being 500, not the points percentage being 500, because every NHL team, 25 out of 30, yeah, has a points percentage of 500. The winning percentage has to be 500 minimum to be in a playoff conversation.
So, I mean, let's see how they fare now. I mean, again, these are tests. So the Pittsburgh test, they played pretty well. Now, they lost the game, but they played pretty well, right? They played really well and probably carried the play a little more than Pittsburgh did. You know, against the Rangers and against Chicago, probably the other way around, against Nashville, probably a little bit the Jets. So overall, you know, you're seeing some positive things. And as you mentioned, you're not playing that run and gun game. But how do you take the next step, or how do you fare when you're in the thick of it? You know, you're around 500. Can you get to that next level? Because being around 500, you can't suddenly sit here and say, oh, this team has completely changed. I mean, who's to say that this latest run isn't the opposite of, you know, that poor run at the beginning of the season, and they're just balancing it out. Now, I think I've seen better signs to indicate that it's not a blip, but we need to still see that here. And this five-game road trip, while it's a road trip, again, is not that challenging. I mean, I know Ottawa's record's pretty solid. We'll talk to Dean Brown about Ottawa. Montreal, I don't think, is as good as their record right now. Carolina's awful. Nashville, you just saw the Jets play. And then Minnesota, now Parise's hurt. You're going to play him in the second half of a back-to-back at 4 in the afternoon. So sure, that's going to be a challenging game. But that's not that hard of a road trip.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll get into it by talking about the Jets and the Senators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
20 minutes past the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Online, TSN 1290. .ca. 6 p.m. tonight, puck drop between the Jets and the Ottawa Senators from our quasi-nation's capital in Kanata, Ontario. Not quite Ottawa, but close enough. The Senators, off to an impressive start to the season, especially given that most people thought this was going to be a year of transition for the team as they had traded away Jason Spezza in the offseason. 7-3-2. So far through 12 games for the Senators, good enough for 16 points in the Eastern Conference. How much of the Senators' record do you think is a function of the fact that they play in the weaker of the two divisions? Do you think this team is as good as their record seems to indicate?
It's a good question. They're off to a good start here. And, you know, I feel like I'm saying this for everybody here, but, you know, even though it's early, they are off to a good start. This team has excellent goaltending. And Craig Anderson has been excellent, had a shutout in the last game for the Ottawa Senators. He's got the best goals against in the league. Save percentage is up there, too. And Robin Lehner's a good goalie, too. Mm-hmm. And Craig Anderson gives them a chance to win every night. And the Ottawa Senators right now, they're winning a lot of games, close games, low-scoring games. Because you look at some of the players, and they still haven't really got going. Clark MacArthur's leading the team in scoring there with Erik Karlsson, who you expect to be leading the team in scoring, but guys like Kyle Turris, Richie, he's only got one goal so far in 12 games. But the Ottawa Senators, they're a skilled team, and especially when Craig Anderson, and we've seen that dating back to the lockout year, guys. When the year Craig Anderson played half the games and his goals against was below two, they're a very difficult team to beat. And last year, they didn't get that goaltending from him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, last year there was kind of a fight for the number one spot. But basically, that with signing Craig Anderson to that three-year deal, they said, well, we have two good goalies now, and we can play whoever we feel gives us the better chance to win. But this is still a very young team, and I know they're getting a lot of production from some rookie guys. Curtis Lazar is going to stick up with the team. Of course, he was a draft pick back in 2013, a first-round draft pick. And, you know, they're a team to me that I'm intrigued by, because you have so much youth there. They're one of the youngest teams in the league, and you've got a guy like Mika Zibanejad who he's only shown flashes, and he hasn't really established himself yet, I think, as a second-line center. He's a good player, but it's a game where the Winnipeg Jets, you go back to a team like the New York Rangers, and you're not going to score a lot on this team. I mean, I'd be surprised if the Jets were able to put three. We don't know. Maybe we'll ask Dean Brown if it's Craig Anderson or Robert Lehner.
It's Craig Anderson in net for the Senators tonight, and he'll interrupt you and tell you. Chris Phillips out of the lineup tonight for the Senators as well. Bobby Ryan is a true game-time decision. He got slashed at the end of the game against the Minnesota Wild. He skated after the regulars left the ice today during the Senators Senators game day skate. So they're not yet sure if he's going to be in the lineup or not. But Chris Phillips definitely out. Bobby Ryan, a game time decision. Craig Anderson gets the start for the Ottawa Senators. Andre Pavlik for the Jets in net. Jets lineup seems to be the same otherwise.
It'll be a speed game tonight. It'll be a fast pace. I mean, fans, I think, will like the style of play that you're going to see on the ice in Ottawa. You have a forward group in Ottawa that, you know, if we talk about matchups, I don't really know if there's a particular matchup. Now, I think I would expect if Bobby Ryan plays, you're going to see Jacob Trouba line up against Jacob Trouba and Mark Stewart, line up against Bobby.
You're really giving Mark Stewart the short shrift so far.
Trouba has been that good.
Yeah.
He's been that impressive.
No, Stewart's been good too. Richard said that earlier.
Yeah. I know. I'm just giving Richard a hard time.
But Trouba's been like very, very impressive. And you look at the Ottawa first line, Drew, and if they have Bobby Ryan, they're going to roll out MacArthur, Bobby Ryan, and Turris. I would expect the Jets to try and get Trouba and Stewart out against that line. If there's no Bobby Ryan, then you're probably still going to match him up against that line, but you may say, Mihalik, Zibanejad, and Chiasson, a little bit more size there. Maybe we want to do that, and maybe do that matchup. So I don't think the Jets coaches have as much pressure in this game to get in the matchups they want as they did against, say, a team like Chicago or on the road. I don't think because Ottawa's a little bit more of a depth team. And, you know, they're going to come at you from kind of all 12 spots. And when I look at the Ottawa defense, guys, I look at a defense that, you know, for the most part, is pretty good puck-moving capabilities. Obviously, with Erik Karlsson there, he's one of the best puck movers, maybe the best puck mover from the back end in the league. And I haven't seen much of Mark Borowiecki, and I know Chris Phillips isn't going to be there. But Patrick Wierkoch and Jared Cowan and Eric Greiba, I mean, there's some ability there to take advantage of those guys, in terms of skating, maybe sometimes in terms of decision-making as well. This is not an overly difficult matchup for the Jets, but I think, as he mentions, Craig Anderson and the play of the goaltenders, well, that's a different story. I mean, the goaltending's been very good. And it seems like whenever Ottawa, I mean, from the outsider's perspective at least, it seems like when Paul MacLean has a team without expectations, he's able to get a lot out of them. Nice. And you know, last year with expectations, they weren't very good. And the years before, you know, they were very good. They beat Montreal in the first round, and they, you know, they gave Pittsburgh an okay run before Pittsburgh bowed out to Boston. So, you know, this Ottawa team is not scary. I actually like Mike Hoffman. That Curtis Lazar, I'm interested to see a little more. Mark Stone as well.
Brandon Manitoba, of course.
Yeah, there's some youth there.
Played in Brandon from Manitoba.
Yeah, there's some youth. And I think one thing about the point about Paul MacLean is when you have a young team, look at their defense, very young. We're going to ask Dean Brown about that. But you look at that team overall, and you're buying in if you're young and you're listening to a veteran coach and you're winning. It's kind of similar to what the Jets at right now. If you're winning and you're a young squad, you're going to buy in. You're just going to, whatever he's selling is going to work for you. So, and you're probably more apt, without Spezza, without that big star, you're more apt to kind of buy into the team, the team identity than you are if there's guys up front, Spezza, Hemsky, those guys, who you know have to carry the weight. And Karlsson is a leader there now, or at least we think he is. We're not as close to the team, and he's taken on a big responsibility, and there's been, you know, a lot of proof about how well he moves the puck, but also how poorly he's played in his own zone this year. You know, you're going to take some of the bad with the good that he brings. But overall, this is not an intimidating matchup for the Jets, and you have to make sure you don't lull yourself into a false sense of security.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. Are you concerned about a sort of a hangover or a letdown after the emotion of Thursday's game, coming into this game in Ottawa, not nearly the excitement around a Jets-Senators game in Ottawa as there is a Jets Penguins game in Winnipeg.
Yeah, I guess the only excitement, Drew, would be, you know, it's a Saturday night national game and all that, but you look at this Ottawa Senators team, and I think Richie makes some good points there. It's a young team. You take Jason Spezza off of that lineup, and now other guys have to step up as far as the responsibility goes. And a guy like Clark MacArthur, I think, has done that. He's a veteran player. Bobby Ryan, obviously, he might not play tonight versus the Jets, but he's another guy that's kind of taken more of a leadership role. And obviously, Eric Karlsson, a young guy, is taking that leadership role. But this team, I think, you know, is there isn't a lot of pressure on them. And I think it's a team that is well-balanced, and a guy like David Legwand, I think, is more suited for a third-line center role, and I think he's done a really nice job. And, you know, you've got a guy like Curtis Lazar, as we mentioned, who's in his first NHL season, full NHL season, and there's balance throughout the lineup. And, you know, when Richie talks about it, it's not a difficult team to play against, you know, with the exception of a couple physical guys like Chris Neal, and, you know, Jared Cowan can lay some good body checks, and Griba and all that, but it's not, you're not talking about going up against the LA Kings, their St. Louis Blues,
that's right,
and, you know, bigger teams like that. So you know, to me, this is going to be a game that's won 5-on-5, and you know, for the Jets, I know we're going to talk about it at some point today. You know, the power play is not going to help them out, so again, it has to be the type of game where they play the way they've been playing defensively, and they capitalize on their opportunities and limit Ottawa's opportunities. And Ottawa's the type of team that they can score too. They're not the most intense and fierce team when it comes to offense. They're not going to scare you maybe with one or two guys, but you know, they can still score. And again, I don't think the Jets should expect to get many goals on Craig Anderson, because not many teams have been scoring a lot on him lately. So
no, Ottawa is 20th in the league with 34 goals for so far in the year. And like you said, Izzy, their goaltending has been very solid. Their goals against, they've given up, there they are, sixth in the league, given up 27 goals so far. So the Senators do have that good goaltending, and I think you will see sort of a tight checking game more than you will a free-flowing game, just by the nature of the actions and the players involved.
Might be a 2-1 game tonight.
Certainly something in that realm. I think take the under if you are inclined to put some money on a game. Not that we would ever.
It'll probably be like 6-3 now that we said
that. Yeah, now that we said it, yeah. Now that I'm telling people to put their money, not that we would condone such a thing, of course, is, you know, I would think the under might be the way to go.
By the way, sorry about spilling all that coffee.
Yeah, you might want to get, you know, clean that up now that we go to break. Let's head to break. Dean Brown from TSN 1200, he's the play-by-play voice for the Senators, is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mindell, alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We are pleased to welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show from our TSN radio affiliate in Ottawa, the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators, Dean Brown. Dean, good afternoon, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, no problem.
Dean, obviously got you on to talk about the Senators game against the Jets later on tonight in Ottawa, 6 p.m. puck drop here on TSN 1290. You look at the Senators' record so far, you know, a very impressive 7-3-2 to start the season. How surprised are you at that start for the Senators?
I don't know if surprised is the word. They got good goaltending, you know. It's not a real complicated thing in this game. It's ironically enough, at the end of the year, if you look at who wins coach of the year most years, the team's got a good goaltender. If you look at winning streaks in this league, generally the goaltender's playing well. If a team is on a good run in 10 games, goaltender's got a good run in 10 games. So surprised is not particularly the word. Compared to the start they had last year, I guess you'd have to say it's a far better start. So from that standpoint, it's more an evaluation, but surprise really isn't part of it.
Dean, how much of this recent success, the early season success, is attributed to goaltending as opposed to maybe some of the performances by some of the young Senators?
Well, I think the goaltending is the single biggest thing. You know, when your starting goaltender has a .948 save percentage and leads the league in save percentage, that means you're going to win some games you probably don't deserve to. Ottawa still gives up way too many shots, and they still give up way too many chances. They have done a better job as a team compared to last year in limiting second and third chances. So you might get a shot from the outside, but you're not likely to get a second chance on the inside. And I think that is really been a great deal of help, and that is where the team has gotten better. The most obvious area where you can say they've gotten better from last year to this, but the gross shot count is still way, way too high, and that's something that they certainly have to work on. But goaltending and limiting those second chances have been a big part of this.
Yeah, Dean, Jason Spezza spends obviously a long time in Ottawa, gets traded to Dallas in the off season, and how has the leadership structure in the dressing room changed since his departure?
Well, I think it's less of a single voice. Like when Jason was here in Alfredson before him, there was always that centerpiece captain, with those two guys. But and there was a leadership group wrapped around them, but it was pretty much singular voice leadership. The other guys would get up in the locker room and say something every now and then. But, those guys were clear number ones. When you're a team like Ottawa and you've now selected a 23-year-old captain, he's going to give some speeches. But there's a greater leaning post mentality on some of the older players on the team to help him be a captain and to, take on a bit more of a leadership role than they might, with a more established captain. So, guys like Chris Phillips and Chris Neal and David Legwand and Clark MacArthur and those kind of guys who've been around a little bit, mm-hmm. They take a more active role when you've got a 23-year-old captain. So, in that context, it is a different dynamic as far as the leadership of this team goes for sure.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice, Dean Brown. Dean, staying with the trade that saw Spezza go to Dallas, the key piece coming back was Alex Chiasson. He's got 7 points so far on the year for the Senators, 3 goals, 4 assists in 11 games. How has he looked in his first stint as an Ottawa Senator?
He's looked okay. That whole line that he's on right now, he's on line with the Milan Mikhailuk and Mika Zibanejad. That line has not been outstanding. He's played well because he's picked up some points on the power play, and so he's played okay. But I'm not sure for him in particular, there was any expectation that he was going to come and rip it up. Again, he's only 23 years old, so there was no expectation that he was going to replace the offense vacated by Jason Spezza. So I think when you're looking like a guy that at Chiasson, you have to really look more at the expectation for him and is he living up to it. So I guess you'd have to say for a 23-year-old kid, 7 points in the first 11 games is very good. That's something that, most teams would be very happy with that. And I don't think Ottawa is displeased, but he's just on a line right now that is playing well defensively, just not producing a whole lot. So I think probably the fortunate thing for him is because the team is winning, that line doesn't get put under the microscope. If your team starts losing, then all the little pieces and parts get, more attention, especially here in Canada, as you're well aware. And so I think right now he's probably benefiting by the fact that he's doing okay personally, but his line is not, and they don't get much attention because of it, because the team wins without their without any huge offense coming out of their line.
Dean, we wanted to ask you about that fourth line there. They're calling it the kid line in Ottawa, that of course being Mark Stone of Winnipeg, former Weedy, Curtis Lazar, who is in his first year, Mike Hoffman, who's spent the majority of his career so far in the AHL, really highly regarded guy in the AHL. He had a couple goals in that win against the Minnesota Wild. What's been the key to the success of that line?
They have no clue. Really, it's not a new story. It happens, but, it's interesting. Mike Hoffman, he just turned 24. Before the Minnesota game, one of the other veteran players was telling me in the locker room, he was asking questions. He didn't know anybody on the Minnesota team except for Thomas Vanek. And he knew who Thomas Vanek was. But he really, he was playing in the AHL last year. He scored 30 goals. He's worrying about who's playing for Syracuse. He doesn't mm-hmm. really. And all these kids are the same. And they're not the first. It's a very, it's a relatively common thing. For a lot of young players, and in this case, a whole line of them, you got a 19-year-old, a 21-year-old, and a 23-year-old. One of the benefits they have is youthful ignorance. When they hop over the boards, they have no clue who they're playing against, and they don't care. They just go and do their thing and try as best they can. They're not educated enough about the National Hockey League to know who they're supposed to be scared of or who they're supposed to be intimidated by or who's supposed to be better than them. And that has turned into actually a great strength of this line. Oftentimes, and I'm not even, we all laugh about it, but really you're not joking. When they hop over the boards, they have no clue who they're playing against.
20 minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Our guest is Dean Brown, the play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators on our TSN affiliate there in Ottawa.
Dean, you talk about youthful ignorance, and Chris Phillips right now is dealing with a lower body injury, and he's, I think, out tonight. So look at the defense that the Senators putting out there, and I believe none of the defensemen are over 26 years old. So six defensemen all under 26. That's obviously a challenge for the coaching staff, but how have they fared, and can you play, you know, a full season with that many young defensemen?
Well, they're going to, one way or the other. You know, it's kind of a, it's not just a defenseman issue. You know, this team has 12, on any given night, has 12 players, you know, more than half the playing roster who are 25 or less. Wow. They've got seven players who are 23 or less. They only have four players who are over 30. You know what I mean? Like, wow. this team, as far as games played, total games played as a team, is the youngest team in the league. You know, this NHL season, the Ottawa Senators are the team that has the fewest number of games played. It really becomes a focus on defense, though, you're right, when you take out a guy like Chris Phillips, because he's got, what, 1,154 mm-hmm. games. So you pull him out, you're left with, you know, Erik Karlsson at 23 with his 327 games of experience becomes by far your most experienced player, because Jared Cowan is 165, Weirkosh has 112, Greiba has 102, CeCe has 61, Borowiecki has 30. So, you know, it's kind of pick your poison. It's funny, earlier this week when it was, you know, they were facing the idea that Phillips was not going to play the last game, which he didn't, and the coach Paul McLean was asked, you know, the day before during the press conference, you know, how you going to, you know, how do you choose which guy plays with Erik Karlsson based on experience? And he laughed and said, "What, do you pick the 30 game guy or the 60 game guy? They're all, you know, none of them have experience. So what does it matter?" I don't know how far you can go with a defense or a team that is this young, but we're going to find out, because there is no plan to make any radical changes to this defense, because as an organization 2 years ago, they pledged to building this team through the draft and building this team by developing their own players and go through the youthful bumps you do. And right now, Ottawa is dressing for any given game 16 of their own draft picks. There's 16 of their own draft picks on this team. You compare it to like Minnesota, who they played the other night. Minnesota had 9 of their own draft picks. You know, Winnipeg has 10 of its own draft picks on their roster. This Ottawa team is truly a drafted team.
It's very interesting. And Bobby Ryan, we spoke about, you know, before referencing him, game time decision tonight, Dean, signs a big contract, $7.25 million per year. Sometimes, I mean, you're around the team all the time, sometimes when a guy signs a big deal, he immediately puts more pressure on himself. And it's not as if Ryan wasn't making good money on his former deal, but, you know, being the highest paid player on the Senators, you know, moving forward, has anything changed at all in terms of his game, or have you noticed any kind of change in demeanor?
No, not really. You know what? To be honest with you, amongst NHL players, you know, that's more a function of us who make normal people's salaries. You know, we try to perceive how we would feel if someone gave us $7 million, you know, and it would be, you know, for most of us, you'd love to have the money, but you know, you'd be shaking in your boots trying to live up to that kind of a salary. In the NHL, because that is the culture of this league, it's not viewed to be anything fantastic. You know, in this league, you know, you think back to guys like Mike Bossy. Mike Bossy didn't get a big raise until he'd had 3 50-goal seasons. You know, in the NHL now, you have 1 30-goal season, and you're making $6 million a year. Mm-hmm. So, you know, Bobby Ryan looks around the league and sees all the other guys who make about the same money he does, and there's always somebody below you who's getting, you know, ripped for not producing, and somebody above you who's, you know, making the kind of money that you're making, and they're, you know, they're doing well. So you're never the worst, you're never the best, and I think that's the point with a lot of these guys who are in that $6.5 million, $7.5 million range. Sure, they feel pressure to perform, and you would, but there's also that understanding that while it may hurt your pride, the reality is, even if you don't perform, you're still going to get paid. So you might feel a bit, you know, bashful taking that check to the bank, but you still cash the check. You know, it's not like you give it back because you didn't, you know, score 30 goals. So I think just the mindset of players in this era that we're in now is different, because, you know, during Bobby Hull's era or any, you know, any of those guys' era, if you made that much more than your teammates, yeah, you would feel a certain amount of pressure, more to them than anything else. But in today's NHL, where they're all business partners, they're all in the same association, you know, they shake hands after games, go for lattes and stuff. It's a different kind of environment. So I'm sure that Bobby Ryan, you know, because he's a competitive person, he wants to do as well as he can. But I don't think he goes home and stares at the walls and thinks about hitting himself in the head with a hammer just because he doesn't live up to what he thinks other people's expectations are of his salary.
Dean, we'll let you go on this last question. Coming into the season, there was rumors or among the Illuminati that Paul McClain might be a coach who could potentially be in trouble if the Senators didn't get off to a good start or that they didn't have a successful season. Have you noticed any change in his coaching style between last year and this year or even when he first came to Ottawa?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think that was a rumor. You know, I think it was pretty common knowledge that, that after what happened here last year and the way the team performed or underperformed, that Paul was on a pretty short leash, and I think probably still is on a pretty short leash. And especially when the general manager plainly said that they wanted you know, the Paul McClain back from year one as opposed to, you know, years two and three, where he tried to, you know, be harder, I don't know what you want to say, you know, just be tougher on the players. He's bending more to what the players want, and he's trying to be more, trying to facilitate more of what the players want, and just trying to be easier to get along with. So there is a noticeable difference, to be honest with you, on a day-to-day basis, and I don't know if you can say that's what's breeding the results that the team is having, but it certainly doesn't hurt, and his goaltenders are making him look like a smarter coach again. So all those things, at least right now in the first 12 games, have gone well for Paul McClain. But your original question is right. There is a marked difference in his demeanor towards and with his players than there was last year, for sure.
Dean Brown is the radio play-by-play voice of the Ottawa Senators. He'll have the call tonight between the Jets and the Senators on TSN 1200 in Ottawa, a game you can hear on TSN 1290 here in Winnipeg. Dean, thanks very much for doing this.
Hey, no problem. Anytime, boys.
Take care, Dean. Thanks. Have a good call tonight. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Dean Brown from our radio affiliate there in Ottawa, TSN 1200, joining us to talk about the Jets and the Senators game here on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Game, 6 p.m. tonight. You can hear it live on the station. Bayak, Edmonds, and Knighty with the call. Should be a good one between the Jets and the Senators as the Jets begin a five-game road trip tonight. Five games in seven nights for the Winnipeg Jets as they play tonight in Ottawa, Tuesday night in Montreal.
That's just like cherry-picking. People always say, oh, they're the end of a five games in seven nights.
It's five games in eight nights.
They're playing every other night except for one back-to-back.
Yeah.
And that's what everybody does in the National Hockey League, really. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... Because if you cut off the day before and you cut off, then you're going to make it look like it's a lot harder. You're playing one back-to-back.
Sure. I mean, I wasn't making it out to seem like it was the most...
I'm not saying you are. I'm just saying that people are going to ask the spin. Oh, at the end of a... They're playing one back-to-back.
Right. They are playing one back-to-back. You're exactly right. And it's tonight in Ottawa, of course, Tuesday in Montreal, so they get sort of the rare 2 days off while they're on the road. Thursday in Carolina, Saturday in Nashville, and then Sunday afternoon, a game in Minnesota. I was a little surprised. It's Andre Pavlik in net for the Jets tonight.
Why are you surprised?
I thought this might be a Michael Hutchinson opportunity. You know you're going to have to use him on one game on this road trip. You're probably going to have to use him either Saturday or Sunday.
Sunday.
Okay, well, I mean, you're going to have to use him once. I thought that they might want to give him a little more action, especially because... I mean, if you're only going to play Michael Hutchinson in back-to-back situations, that's 10 games this year. That's not enough. Mm-hmm. So I thought this might be an opportunity to give him a game that's not on a back-to-back, and you give Andre Pavlik 4 days off between games. You know, play him Thursday against Pittsburgh, and then not again till Tuesday in Montreal. I thought this might be an opportunity where you'd see Michael Hutchinson.
No, it's not a ridiculous thought. I think there's some merit to it.
Eh.
I think the way Andre Pavlik is playing, though, I think you got to go with him. And I remember talking about this at the beginning of the season, and you look at Andre Pavlik, and I think he played 58 games, was it, last year, around there, and I was expecting him to be around 65 to 70 this year because of the fact that there's more pressure on him, and he's come into camp now, the season, obviously, in better shape and all that, and I think he's perfectly fine to play four of these five games on the road trip. You know, he's second in the league to Corey Schneider. Corey Schneider started every single game for the Devils this year.
Well,
they don't really have
I mean, their backup goalie is Scott Clemenson. They just put him on waivers.
That's why we talked about them being a threat for Budaj on the original waivers.
Schneider was pulled for Keith Kincaid yesterday, but aside from Corey Schneider, he's played the second most minutes in the NHL. And I think, you know, Paul Maurice is perfectly happy with riding him because he's the guy. And, you know, the way he's been playing and the fact that he can now handle it, not that he couldn't handle it before, but he made a commitment. I mean, we saw the Alan Walsh tweet and all that, and he's really proven it.
No goalie, in my mind, is going... I mean, it's just not... it's not feasible to expect that Andrei Pavlik's going to play 70 or 72 games this year. So that's why I thought this might be an opportunity.
Well, I said you're nitpicking here because I said 65 to 70.
Right.
Well, you're saying 72.
I'm going back to my original point of you need to get Michael Hutchinson some games that aren't necessarily on the back to back.
You're right.
And this was an opportunity. You go into Ottawa. It's not, you know, Ottawa's not an offensive dynamo or anything. You give them a good opportunity. It's not too much of a layoff between the Chicago game, because if you're not playing them again until next Sunday, it's a 2 weeks off between starts.
It's going to be tough, to your point.
Seems a little long to me is all.
Yeah, and it's a good point. And Hutchinson, for, you don't want Hutchinson to only be the second game back-to-back goalie.
Right.
And he never plays a game during the season when it's a regular start because you want to get him some more starts. I think the problem with that, Richie, is then he doesn't really get into the flow of the season. If you need to go to him, okay, well, I'm just saying, I mean,
you guys are overthinking it. I just don't think that you're going to go to Hutchinson here. You just got a big win against Pittsburgh. You're going to Saturday.
I think we're not really talking more. We're talking more as the season progresses. Not tonight. Yeah. I mean, as the season goes.
Yeah, as the season goes, you have to get him in more. But, I mean, you can see that Maurice is a Pavlik believer, likes to ride his horse right now. And I would be surprised if you saw Hutchinson before the Saturday-Sunday split, whatever way they wanted to do it. I'm assuming they want to give Pav Sunday off and then have him play Saturday, Tuesday against the Devils. That's what I would say. I just don't think right now. You just be creating a story. Let your starters just go.
You think you'd be creating a story if you played him tonight?
Yeah, maybe. But I just don't, even regardless of the story, I just don't think that's, I don't know why you'd play him. I mean, he hasn't played any back-to-backs. You just gave him Sunday off against Chicago. He's rested. He's fine. You ride your guy right now.
And Pavlik let in 3 goals against Pittsburgh, but I thought he was really good.
Yeah, so
I know, you know, the Simon Dupre goal, the first goal.
Yeah.
You know, he didn't really see it. I didn't.
I was sitting right behind that net, so I was right behind Pavlik. He couldn't see the puck.
I didn't think. I think this year, Andrei Pavlik has maybe had one or two bad games. Really. I think he's. Again, I know. You know, I've taken a lot of heat on Twitter because I've been praising Andrei Pavlik, but
everybody thinks you're not. Actually, it's a rule on Twitter that if you sign up for an account, you're not allowed to compliment somebody. You only have to yell at them as loudly as humanly possible via a computer.
Drew, sounds perfect for you, Drew.
Norm MacDonald in his stand-up yesterday was praising Andrei Pavlik. Like, he even mentioned Pavlik. So, I mean, the guy's playing well. It's been 14 games here. But, you know, he's played well. He's given the Jets a chance to win every single night. So I agree with Richie. I don't think we're going to see Hutchinson more than once. We'll see him on the weekend in the second game of the back-to-back. But, yeah, I'd like to see him play a little bit more as the season goes along, because I think that will give you more. That will give Maurice more confidence as he sees him play a little bit more and more, because he's only got one start here.
They'll play him against the Charlotte Checkers, but I don't know.
That's a shot at the Carolina Hurricanes. So let's talk about this five-game road trip. We've talked about Ottawa tonight. Then after that, they go to Montreal. And then you got Carolina, Nashville, and the Wild.
No, by the way, I just wanted to sort of interrupt you. By the way, I was counting the games since the Jets came back. They're 2-6 against Ottawa.
Okay,
so I mean, not to say they're not going to beat Ottawa. I'm just saying they haven't had a lot of luck against Ottawa.
Fair enough.
This is not a physical trip, and by that I mean these are speed teams that don't have a ton of physicality, aren't the most aggressive. So this is not going to be a hard on your body kind of trip. Okay, Ottawa, look at their roster tonight, Montreal, Carolina, even Nashville. This is not physical teams. The Jets should be able to create a certain style of play against these guys, and you want to be a little more aggressive because you can then dictate that style and make teams play off of that. So whether it be Ottawa, Montreal, any of those teams, none of them are going to be, to me, dictating the physical play, and I think the Jets have the opportunity on this trip. I don't think this trip is going to be one of those where you're going through, you know, the Pacific Division, you're going to get worn down, you're going to, you know, going in the Central, playing St. Louis and those teams. Right now they're playing Nashville, Minnesota, but playing St. Louis, you know, a tougher team like that, and you're going to get worn down physically. It's not going to be these kind of games. There's room to move here on this trip.
And I think that could be almost a negative thing for the Jets when you look at how they've been playing, and now they're going against teams that are more skilled teams. And again, you know, everybody likes to look at road trips, and, you know, I know they do this on the big show and everything like that, and Leibel and Westwood give their predictions. Everybody's saying, well, they can most likely go 3-2 here. Maybe you lose one of the back-to-back games and maybe one of the Ottawa-Montreal games, mm-hmm. so maybe you go 3-2. I think everyone's going to say that Carolina should be a win, but, you know, nothing's guaranteed in the NHL. It doesn't matter who you're playing.
Well, it's funny, going back to what we were talking about at the beginning of the show, talking about have the Jets turned a corner. Previous years, the Jets would go into Carolina and lose that game, playing against lesser opponents, like they did against Buffalo last year when they went into Buffalo and they lost in Buffalo. We'll see. You know, not that, you know, beating Carolina in Carolina actually says anything, but losing would say a hell of a lot more than winning would.
I should note they're on a 4-game winning streak. But okay, yeah, fine. Their roster's terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they're playing better because they couldn't possibly keep playing as poorly as they were at the beginning of the year. But it's going to be interesting. I mean, it is a, you know, you got the two division games at the end of the road trip, and we know how important those division games are, and we know how poor the Jets were in division last season. Obviously, they're off to a better start this year when they play in terms of their in-division games.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you have to think that the Jets are taking that approach, that they're, and every team is going to say this, that every game, you take every game as it is. You don't look ahead too far, and you look at the Carolina game and say, oh, that's a win for sure. But, yeah, it's not an easy road trip. And I don't mean that to, you know, contradict what Richie's saying, but easy meaning that it's not going to be easy to necessarily get 6 of 10 points on this road trip. I think it's easy physically, Richie. I think I'm agreeing with you in that.
I think it's easy both ways. We disagree. I mean, I just don't think this trip's that hard. I know the records are here. I don't think this trip... Okay, I agree. It's easy. It's a little bit too extreme of a word. But this is not the most challenging trip, put it that way.
No, and I agree with you on that point. I'm just saying I wouldn't be surprised if the Jets won 2 out of 5, for example.
To me, that would be a big letdown for the way that they're playing right now. Because, you know, Rick talks about all the time, these 10-game segments. You've got 3-0-1 right now in this 10-game segment. You have to get some points. You have to get more points here. You have to stack it up. You have to be able to have those segments where you're getting more than the other guys, you know, considerably more.
Because there's going to be 5-game road trips later on in the year where you go through the 3 California teams and maybe Vancouver or whatever it is. There's a lot of harder games ahead in the schedule.
Yes, the latter part of their schedule in the last month and a half is pretty difficult. You're playing a lot of Western squads. You know, you're playing St. Louis a bunch near the end of the year. They're not easy. So you want to be able to gain ground right now. And while these Eastern teams have good records, you know, as they're Eastern teams. And you look at their rosters and they're not that intimidating. So they should be able to handle it.
It all gets underway at 6 p.m. tonight with the Jets and the Senators from Ottawa. Let's head to break, and when we come back, our Saturday Spotlight interview with ESPN hockey personality Barry Melrose. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
1 hour down, 2 hours to go. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. The Saturday Spotlight segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, an essential part of your protective equipment is a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com.
The Illegal Curve, Saturday Spotlight.
Saturday Spotlight this week features an interview with ESPN hockey analyst Barry Melrose, former NHL head coach with both the Los Angeles Kings and briefly with the Tampa Bay Lightning, and he also actually played here with the Winnipeg Jets version 1.0. Richie sat down with Barry Melrose earlier this week, or late last week, I believe. Here is that interview on this week's Saturday Spotlight.
Edition of Saturday Spotlight by Barry Melrose, former NHL coach of ESPN, of course, U.S. television personality. Barry, thanks for joining me today. How are you?
My pleasure. Always nice to talk to people from Western Canada. I don't know if you guys know this, but I actually played in Winnipeg a couple of years when the Jets were first back in the NHL the first time. So I always enjoy talking to people from Winnipeg.
We did that. Know that, Barry. I want to get to that because, you know, this is kind of going to be a career, an interview about your career. And I grew up in Winnipeg.
Jeez, I don't know if we got enough time, do we?
We'll try our best here.
Okay.
And you cut me off whenever you see fit or whenever you need to go. I grew up in a house in Winnipeg, and my dad, a big Jets fan, so he told me all about the Barry Melrose years just as you were getting up and I was growing up and watching the LA Kings. I want to start off with you being from Saskatchewan, Barry, and obviously in light of the sad news of what's going on right now with Gordie Howe, I wanted to ask you about growing up. You're born in 1956 in Saskatchewan. Do you automatically grow up with Gordie Howe as your idol?
I grew up as a Toronto fan, a big Toronto fan, so... I love the Leafs. That's when they were winning Stanley Cups. Matter of fact, I saw the last one in 67. So I loved everything about Toronto. And Tim Horton was my favorite player. I was a defenseman. I love defensemen. I love the Toronto defense. Hunt Imlach used to use 4 defensemen, kill them penalties, things like that. So I was a big Toronto fan. Gordy, obviously being from Saskatchewan, was always special and such a great player. And when I was growing up, Gordy was still the best player in the world in the face of the NHL. So, of course, all of us got Saskatchewan watched Gordy and loved Gordy. So it was always one of the highlights of my career when I first played against Gordy and when I first met Gordy.
You know, Barry, I look back at your career. You were actually drafted in the NHL and in the WHA in the same year by the Habs and the NHL in Cincinnati and the WHA. What was that like at that time?
Well, it was completely different. The draft was held, so it wasn't a case of flying all of us guys to Toronto or Montreal in the draft. So, I thought I was going to go in about three rounds. That's what my agent said. And actually, that day I went. I grew up on the farm, so I was out on the tractor all day. I just couldn't hang around and wait. Went out and did some summer follow, and my grandfather ran out to the field, picked me up, and that's when got the call from my agent that I was drafted by the Montreal Canadiens in the second round. So, but right away it was a great news, bad news situation because obviously you're proud to be drafted by Montreal that high.
Right.
But then he started realizing, hey, wait a minute, they've got four NHL all-star defensemen in Montreal, and they got four all-star defensemen in the American League. So all of a sudden you did the math, and you realized, wow, there's a lot of defensemen I got leapfrogged to play for Montreal.
So is that really how you get to Cincinnati? Because Montreal is so backlogged with so many all-stars on their squad?
Yeah, that was it. I remember I still got it, as a matter of fact. I got the contract offer from Montreal signed by Sammy Pollock yesterday, and it was a three-way deal, one salary in the NHL, one salary in the American League, and one salary in the International League. So Cincinnati came to me. I think I was a third or fourth round pick in Cincinnati, and they flew me down to Cincinnati, and me and Greg Carroll went down together, and you know, they had a brand new beautiful building. They had Dennis Sobchak signed, a guy that I knew very well because I played in Weyburn and Dennis Sobchak played in Weyburn.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacques Loca was signed. They had a lot of great players. I fell in love with Cincinnati, and I signed with Cincinnati in WHA.
Joined by Barry Melrose on the fifth edition of Saturday Spotlight on TSN 1290. Barry, what was your best memory of playing in the WHA? It was a short period of time, but is there one thing that stands out at all for you?
The guys I played with. I got to play with Bobby Hull. I got to play against Gordie Howe. I got to play against Frank Mahovlich. I got to play against so many of the great old players. Davy Keon, I remember the first time I met Davy Keon in a bar in Hartford. That was a thrill. I played against all these guys. Every time you stepped on the ice at WHA, there was a great older veteran on the other team. So I got to play against Whitey Stapleton, played with Whitey Stapleton in Cincinnati. I think what I remember about the WHA, and I met my wife in Cincinnati, we're still married 40 years later. So Cincinnati was a great place to play. We had a great young team. Mike Leute was on the team. Peter Marsh was on the team. Mike Gardner was on the team. Mark Messier was on the team. Robbie Fatorik was on the team. We had a heck of a team.
Wow. Yeah.
The WHA at the end, as you guys in Winnipeg know, mm-hmm. was a heck of a league. They remember Birmingham signed all those young players. And they all turned out to be good players. So the WHA was a great league at the end.
And Barry, after that, you went to Winnipeg and you played under Tom McVie in the Tom McVie era in Winnipeg. And I can remember my dad talking a lot about that. What's your memories of Winnipeg? You mentioned, obviously, in the outset of the interview. What do you remember most about your short time here?
Cold. my wife had never felt cold. But I loved playing for Tommy. He was a great guy. He was the guy that I always said there's like five guys I know that should be put into a room and then he should talk about hockey, and that would be the just the makings of an unbelievable book, and Tommy would certainly be one of them. Just a guy that done everything in hockey, every situation in hockey, every league in hockey, knew every story in hockey. He was in the middle of most of the stories in hockey, knew everybody in hockey.
You know, you talked about Gordie Howe, and obviously being a Leafs fan, you end up playing in Detroit, and the history of the Detroit Red Wings at that time. Obviously, growing up, and the Leafs were actually winning then, and a lot of people, of a later generation don't remember the Leafs winning, but the Wings have kind of always been that team that was winning, or at least had the history of success. What was it like playing for the Detroit Red Wings?
Well, I was there just when Mr. Ilitch took over, and Jimmy Devolano took over, and they signed me as a free agent. And we weren't very good at the start. I always say that that team I was on got Detroit Steve Yzerman. So I always feel proud of that. We weren't very good, and Yzerman was the pick that they got the next year, fourth overall, I believe. So then they started getting better, started making the playoffs. Reed Larson was on the team. Danny Gare was on the team. It was a group of older guys. We didn't have any real young stars at that time. That was when, you know, the next couple of years when they started drafting well, got Yzerman and Lane Lambert and then Adam Graves and, you know, a little bit later and stuff like that. So, you know, it was just the start of good things happening. Mr. Illich was a great owner. The Joe was empty, before Mr. Illich took over and all of a sudden, Detroit started winning and it became a really good hockey town, and then it became Hockey Town USA, and then everyone knows what happened after that, 20-some straight playoff appearances and arguably the last 20 years the greatest franchise in the NHL.
It really is, and it's really interesting to hear how many people that you've crossed paths with, and I want to move from your playing career to your coaching career. You got your start in the WHL in 87. How did you get to coaching? You know, like some people fall into it, some people thought when they were playing, oh, I'd always become a coach. Where did you come from on that pendulum?
I always thought I'd become a coach. I was the type of player that nothing came easy. I had to work hard physically, and I had to, you know, work hard mentally. I had to know the other team. I had to know their intricacies. I had to know what the other players did, things like that. So I had to think, and the next progression was to become a coach. I was always interested why certain teams win all the time, why certain teams lose all the time. It can't be just talent level, because there were teams with more talent that didn't win, and it all came back to coaching. So I started watching coaches. I sort of went over the coaches I had. Bill Dineen was my coach in Adirondack. He helped me a lot. He made me an assistant coach in Adirondack, which helped my progression very, very much. But I always thought I wanted to stay in the game. I loved hockey. I've loved it since I've been 5 years old. I always wanted to stay in the game, and coaching was I could have played a couple more years in the American League, but it didn't really make sense to continue playing. I knew I wasn't going to play a ton longer, so it was time to get into the coaching ranks.
Joined by Barry Melrose on the Saturday Spotlight. Barry, you went from the WHL to Adirondack, as you mentioned, of the AHL. How did that move come about?
I was lucky enough to win in junior. I had great teams in Medicine Hat. We won the Memorial Cup. Trevor Linden was on the team. Robbie DeMaio was on that team. I had Mark Fitzpatrick was our goaltender. I had a great team in Medicine Hat. We won the Memorial Cup two years in a row. Then I went to Seattle. I did a good job in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And Jimmy Devolano, who was my general manager and signed me as a free agent from Toronto to go to Detroit, hired me from Seattle to go and coach the American League team in Adirondack, where I had finished for my playing career. So it was sort of a complete circle where I played in Adirondack. That gave me my chance to be an assistant coach. That gave me my chance to be a head coach in the juniors. And then they hired me back to be the head coach in the American League. So I owe Detroit a lot. Detroit Red Wings have been very, very good to me in my career.
You won the Calder Cup in 1992, and I looked at the roster of the team that you coached, and the likes of Keith Primeau, Sheldon Kennedy, who Jets fans and people from Manitoba will know, of course, Mike Sillinger, Gary Shuchek, who played with you later with LA, Jason York, who people see on TV today, and then one name that stood out to me was Bruce Boudreau cracked that roster at the end of the season.
Well, actually, it's funny because Bruce and I played together in Toronto, so we were good friends, and I was coaching in the playoffs, and Detroit made the first round, and they took Primo and Sillinger, and they took four of the young players up with them to the NHL team. So I didn't have many players left, so I had to find some players to get by the first round. And Bruce was playing in Fort Wayne, and I called Bruce and I said, "Bruce, I need some help. Can you come in and play? I can't guarantee how long you play, but I need you." And he came in, played the first round. We won the first round. I got all those guys back because Detroit lost out, and Bruce, I wasn't able to keep Bruce around, but he was a big help to me in the first round, and we won, and we ended up winning the Calder Cup there. I had a great team. Alan Bester was in net. Uh-huh. As a matter of fact, that was a series that We played St. John's in the finals. Toronto's farm team, Mark Crawford and Joe Quinville, were the two coaches. And no team won a home game. We won four games in St. John's, and they won three games in Adirondack.
Wow. And these stories are great, Barry. Really enjoying this so far. You're listening to Barry Melrose on the Saturday Spotlight on TSN 1290. The next season, you're coaching the National Hockey League, and you're coaching arguably the greatest player of all time, Wayne Gretzky. Did you ever think, whoa, how did this all happen so quickly?
Well, no, it wasn't a case of coaching arguably the best player. He was the best player.
I agree.
No doubt about it. things did happen fast. But I won.
Right.
I had great teams, and I was able to win, and that gets people's attention. You're seeing it now with all the coaches that are going up from junior or the American League. If you win in the American League, you know, you'll get a chance, and I got a chance. I wasn't looking to coach in L.A. My goal was to coach the Detroit Red Wings. I was going to coach in Adirondack, and my next step would be go to Detroit and be the head coach in Detroit. But Brian Murray was in Detroit, and he wanted to coach some more. And L.A. came, and I talked with L.A., and they liked how my teams played, and they liked the interview process. And L.A. offered me a great contract to go and be the head coach of the L.A. Kings.
What was it like coaching Gretzky, Barry?
Yeah, it was great. It was about Wayne is exactly how you hope he is. He's just as good a guy as appears on TV. You know, everyone says, "Oh, this is too good to be true." He's got to have some flaws. He doesn't. He's a great guy. He loves to play. He loves to practice. He loves being in the dressing room with his buddies. That's his favorite place in the world. And he played hard for me for 3 years. So Gretz was great. He was funny. He was a great guy to coach. I always tell the story. Like, you can imagine the polls on Wayne Gretzky. You know, everyone wants him to do commercials. Everyone wants him to do all these things. Not once in 3 years did Wayne ever come to me and say, "Barry, can I miss practice? I can do this Ford commercial." He never once came to me and asked me that. He always made it work with his schedule some other way. He was like that. The hockey came first. Hockey was most important, and his teammates were the people he loved. So nothing but great experiences coaching Gretz.
So interesting, Barry. And you won the WHL. You win in the AHL. You come so close in 93, and of course our hockey show being called the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You know, we've talked about that before when we've had you on. But do you think, because you won at both levels and you came so close in 93, do you think about that a lot anymore, or it's in the past and you've moved on?
When I think about it is something happens when it's an anniversary or something, and they always, they show us beating Toronto and stuff like that, or they show a Gretzky moment when he scores 8-0-2, then the memories come back, and it's the old what if. So, they're still there. You never forget it. You know, every time I watch that, the games against Montreal, I still think we're going to win those games. But the memories are still there. It's always, what if this would have happened, because in hindsight, and I tell young guys this all the time, I just thought it was going to be, we were going to go back to next year. We didn't win it this year, but we'll win it next year. And it's so hard to do that. We're seeing it now. Teams just can't repeat. That's one thing I tell these young guys, that if you do happen to get on a run like the New York Rangers did last year, you better make sure you win it, because you don't know when you'll go back.
So true. And, after Los Angeles, you start working for ESPN, and really, for American television viewers, you're kind of like the Don Cherry in terms of how, you're recognizable you are. How did you come across the ESPN job?
Well, actually, that's pretty funny, too, because in 93, when we were going, ESPN was doing the coverage in the States, and CBC was doing the coverage in Canada. Mm-hmm. So we played four Canadian teams. We played Vancouver, Calgary, Toronto, Montreal.
That's right, yeah.
So it almost became CBC was cheering for Canada, and ESPN was cheering for us. and obviously for ratings, because the longer Gretzky stays in, the better for everybody.
Right.
Obviously when you got, I had a high-profile team with a lot of superstars that, everybody was, coming to us and doing interviews and stuff. So I did a lot of stuff with ESPN, and the first call I got when I got fired, it was funny, I got fired in the morning, and I got home, and the first call I got was from ESPN, and they said, geez, Barry, we're sorry you got fired, but we want you to come work for us. So I said, yeah, this, you know, this will be good for 7 or 8 months, and, you know, then I'll get back into coaching. And, you know, 20 years later, I'm still working for ESPN.
That's the craziest part. I was going to ask you, what's your favorite part about doing television?
Just still in the game. I get to talk hockey every night. I get paid to watch games. I get paid to talk about it. I get paid to travel and watch games. I'm the luckiest guy in the world. So when I look back, you know, I was lucky enough to play. That's the greatest thing in the world. I got to coach and coach some great, great guys. And now I've stayed in the game and have made my living in the game since I basically was 16 years old. I've been paid to be in hockey since I've been 16 years old, playing in waiver in Tier 2. So very blessed, and you know, I don't take it for granted. Every time I go to work, I get excited. I love watching games, and I love talking about our sport.
Barry, I appreciate you taking time today, and it's always interesting to speak to guys who've been around the game for so long, and you had some great stories. So we thank you very much for your time, and I hope you have a great day.
How are the Roughies doing? Are they still in the playoff hunt?
The who?
The Saskatchewan Roughriders.
Oh, the Roughs. You can't mention the Roughriders, Barry, to Bomber fans, because the Bombers just lost their 8th game in a row last week. So the Riders are going to be in the playoffs, and the Bombers are going to be at home for, I don't want to say how many years in a row it's been. I just know it's been 8 losses in a row this season.
I always remember Saskatchewan and Winnipeg always played home and home around Labor Day.
Mm-hmm. Still do.
And I always remember that because that was always just before I went to camp. So I used to, probably a lot of times I listened to them on the combine. I always remember listening to Saskatchewan, Winnipeg near Labor Day, and, you know, 2 or 3 days later I was on my way to camp. So, you know, once you're a Rough Rider fan, you're always a Rough Rider fan.
I know a bunch of Saskatchewan boys, excuse me, who would agree with that, and you can tell your wife that it's probably colder now than it ever has been up here in Manitoba.
Okay, man. Take care.
Thanks, Brad. Have a good one.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show, the podcast on TSN1290.ca.
Big thank you to Barry Melrose, ESPN hockey analyst, former NHL head coach, for being the featured interview on this week's Saturday Spotlight. In case you missed any of that interview or the interview earlier in the show with Dean Brown, Ottawa Senators play-by-play voice, it will be available on iTunes, on TSN1290.ca, and of course on our website, illegalcurve.com. Richard, you know, of course, very good job. Well, job well done with the interview with Barry Melrose. Sounds like, you know, another great storyteller in sort of the course of these storytellers we've had on these Saturday Spotlight interviews.
What I found fascinating is how many players and coaches, how he comes across so many different people, right? He talks about playing Messier and coaching against Quenneville and Crawford, you know, and coaching Primo and playing with Bruce Boudreau, then coaching Bruce Boudreau. I mean, coaching Gretzky and Rob. But you think about that and how, you know, that it's that whole idea that hockey, you know, if you talk about a guy who's been through the NHL and all those different leagues, he has a relationship with so many people in the game, they're all interconnected somehow. And that's why you see all these long-lasting relationships, because these guys, you know, they continue to cross paths, and it's such a small world within that big hockey world.
That's exactly right. Coming up, Saturday Spotlight next week is going to feature an interview with Carey Fraser, currently the TSN rules analyst, a former NHL official, probably the most famous NHL official, at least in the last 25 years, I would say. Everybody remembers Carey Fraser. So he'll be joining us next Saturday on the Saturday Spotlight, so you can look forward to that.
I'm looking forward to it. We're going to tape it this week, and opinionated guy, and you don't really hear much from referees, and like to ask him. I've already thinking about the questions. I'm looking forward to it.
So we just have to have Marty McSorley on, and then we'll cover all of the players in the Illegal Curve situation there back in 93. So we get Carey Fraser, who was the ref.
Right.
Barry Melrose, who was the coach of the... Mm-hmm. I guess it would be funny to get maybe Patrick Waugh.
Or Jacques Demers.
Or Jacques Demers.
Senator Jacques Demers now.
Yeah, we'll just get everybody that was on the ice or on the bench.
Then the show will just explode. It'll just explode on itself, that'll be the end of it.
Yeah. It was a great interview. Barry Melrose is great. We've had him on a couple times before, I believe, maybe more than that. And it was pretty funny how he made the Roughies reference, and that was well played by Richie. People don't want to really hear about the Saskatchewan Rough Riders in the playoffs, but no, he was a great coach, does a great job for ESPN, and as you mentioned, Drew, he's got so many great stories.
Yeah, you brought some Bobka into the studio today, Drew. We shouldn't go without a mention there.
That's right.
The Bobka?
My wife Laura was kind enough to make you guys a little snack. You know, she cares about you guys, even though I keep telling her she doesn't need to. But she made you guys some chocolate babka.
And we appreciate that. It was very nice of your wife to do that. Delicious babka. I got to say, very tasty. I've never had babka before.
Yeah, well.
So for me, there isn't another babka because I've never had babka before.
There's no cinnamon babka in your life. There's just the chocolate babka.
Really good.
I know. Very good. Still to come on the show today, Pat Hickey is going to join us at the top of the next hour. And when we come back, we'll talk about Carter Ashton and his propensity to use horse medicine in his training. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.